Hi, this is Wendy Chan. I'm a resident at Kings County Hospital Center in Brooklyn, and I'm also the assistant editor for the Original Kings of County academic blog. I'm thrilled to be introducing my guest today, Dr. Annette Rickard. She is the primary investigator of the recent meta-analysis, Salt or Sugar for Your Injured Brain, as well as being an emergency medicine consultant from Dereford Hospital, which is a major trauma center in the UK. Welcome, Dr. Rickard. So nice of you to join us.
Hi, Wendy. Thanks for having me.
So for our online blog, we focused on three recent meta-analyses reviewing mannitol versus hypertonic saline in elevated ICPs following a brain injury.
Yeah.
Of the three studies, yours was the only of the three to exclude all other causes of elevated ICP. Can you explain to us why it was important to separate these two cohorts, traumatic and non-traumatic etiologies of cerebral edema, in your study?
My reason for excluding those studies was because I particularly wanted to look at the traumatic brain injury group, and I wanted to exclude anything which might confound results. I wanted the studies to be as homogeneous as possible, which I was including in my meta-analysis. The guidance that we use very much cohorts those two into separate groups. So treating ICP is important, but there's a care bundle which is completely different. The care bundle for a traumatic brain injury is going to include, you know, have they got trauma elsewhere, optimising their brain function, what, trying to manage any hemorrhage that's going on anywhere else in their body, etc. So it is completely different.
In the emergency department, some of us might lose interest after a negative head CT because, as you know, the edema from TBI can develop in more hours to days rather than seconds to minutes. But that's not to say that these patients aren't on the course towards developing clinically significant increased ICP and that they have a significant traumatic brain injury. Can you give us some insight on how to recognize these patients in the emergency department?
Okay, so I guess there's two components, isn't there? There's the group that are sitting up talking to you with a good GCS or at least greater than 8 that don't need a tube, that, you know, you can sit and watch and wait and make a decision. I wouldn't dream of initiating hydrosmotor therapy in that group. And to me, that's not the significant traumatic brain injury group that needs a really good care bundle in the ED really, really quickly. The patients who are GCS compromised, and by that I mean, you know, they've bought themselves a tube to get through scan, they've had a package, they've had a bundle of care, which obviously includes, you know, sitting them up, optimising their oxygenation, making sure their ventilation is good, their CO2 is all right, making sure their normothermic, their blood glucose is all good, all those great sort of holistic things that you're doing as part of your bundle. The patients that have been to CT tubed like that, who then return, once I've seen that CT, if there's a sniff of swelling, I would probably want to initiate some sort of therapy. I do it in conjunction with, you know, my neurosurgical colleague's advice.
And what are your neurosurgeons asking you for when you call them up?
Well, you know exactly what I'm going to say. I'm going to say they always ask for a CT scan because that's the way the neurosurgeons roll, isn't it? So they won't speak to you unless you've got a CT scan, which is a shame, but, you know, that's the way it works. And then in terms of, do you mean in terms of care bundle, what do they suggest?
Right. What's the current care bundle that you're getting from the neurosurgery perspective?
Okay. They will often suggest giving a bolus of hyperosmolar therapy. Don't forget, by this point, the patient's usually intubated, ventilated, and paralyzed. You know, that person urgently needs, obviously, their procedure, but they definitely need that bolt at that point, don't they, because they've not got any other way of declaring. And it seems to me, the reason I did this study in the first place was we were getting different opinions from different neurosurgeons. Some would say give mannitol, some would say give hypertonic saline, and there seemed to be no consistency, and I wondered whether there was a difference or not in what they were capable of doing and in side effect profiles and things. So that's why I did the meta-analysis in the first place. More often now, I have noticed, and I don't know if you have as well, that the neurosurgeons are asking us to give hypertonic saline as a first port of call.
Well, honestly, in RED, the neurosurgeons are still asking for mannitol, but I'm not sure if it's because they're just slow to jump on the hypertonic saline bandwagon. So next question is, how does what we do for the patient in the emergency department differ from what our neurosurgical colleagues are doing upstairs?
My raison d'etre, I guess, is to be a damage control artist. So I'm a damage limitation artist, so I don't want to make the injury that's already present any worse. So in the ED, I see my role as getting that patient to their definitive care as soon as possible. So by that I mean getting into the neurosurgical theatre. So I guess with the multi-injury patient, so the patient that's not just got a traumatic brain injury, but who's got other things going on as well, I need to optimise that overall outcome. So that's making sure that we're on top of damage control, that we've got massive transfusion activated, that we're doing, you know, really good hemostatic resuscitation of the patient, that we're keeping them at the right temperature, that we're not letting them get cardiopathic, that we are doing everything we can to limit blood loss as far as we can in the ED, that we're optimising ventilation and oxygenation, and all of those good things will optimise their brain outcome. That's what I see our role. And when you talk about, you know, ICP monitoring and the tools that the neurosurgical team have and use, yes, that's important, but let's not forget that raised ICP, I think, is a surrogate marker of a patient who's very sick, and it's a surrogate marker of what their outcome is likely to be. So if they've got very, very high ICP, which is not controlled, they're more likely to die, and my role is to try and prevent them from dying and to limit their morbidity.
So it sounds like in your emergency department, both the ED physicians and the neurosurgeons are recommending hypertonic saline or mannitol these days. Are there any circumstances or medical comorbidities that might make you choose one type of therapy over the other?
Yeah. So patients who come in, you know, patients that come to the ED that you know, for example, have multiple trauma, then there's a theoretical advantage of using a hypertonic sodium solution as opposed to mannitol. So mannitol is a diuretic. It's going to dry the patient out. Hypertonic saline is going to draw fluid into the intravascular compartment. So I guess that's one group. The patients that you know have deranged sodium when they come to the front door because you know that that's in their history or that's part of their medical history, then of course you might want to be very careful about using sodium solutions in that group. You might want to prefer perhaps think about using mannitol instead.
Those are all good points. We should be mindful of patient in front of us and not just following protocol blindly without any consideration for our patient's individual unique set of circumstances. So let's turn the conversation back to your research a little bit. What were some of the interesting discoveries you made along the way? Did you start out with one set of ideas and then by the end of the study maybe have a different outlook on hyperosmolar therapy?
Okay, so that's a really good question. So I guess I went into the study hoping that I was going to find an answer to which product, a mannitol solution or a hypertonic sodium solution, would be better for patients. That's what I wanted to figure out with traumatic brain injury. Unfortunately, all of the studies I found, and you'll have found the same because you've looked at three meta-analyses, don't use great patient-centered outcomes. So they don't use mortality or morbidity as their primary outcomes. They use surrogate markers. So whether it's a drop in intracranial pressure or an absolute value of intracranial pressure, and they use this surrogate marker of intracranial pressure to answer the question of whether the product is better for the patient or not. And it made me think that if I was ever designing, and if money and resources were no object, and if I really wanted to answer this question properly, I would need to do a fabulous multi-center RCT and power it sufficiently to detect a clinically meaningful outcome for patients. And that's a really tough thing to do, I'm sure you probably agree with me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the other thing that struck me, and this is kind of methodological stuff as opposed to clinical stuff, but I found that all of the studies I looked at, all of them were heavily biased. Even the ones that seemed not to be at first glance, that seemed really well thought out and planned and sufficiently powered to detect meaningful, you know, differences, were either not blinded properly or randomization wasn't robust. And actually, most of them were funded. So lots of the studies look at slightly wacky sodium solutions, not just hypertonic sodium chloride. They looked at sodium lactate, sodium yada yada, ending in 8, you know, just the various substances which we wouldn't necessarily find on our shelves. So when I was trying to find an answer, it was very difficult to pull these studies to try and find the correct answer. And I found I was probably looking at apples and pears a lot of the time and trying to combine them to see if I could get any meaningful results. So frustrating, but useful to think about, I guess.
Well, I was going to wrap it up with asking you what you'd like to see, but you sort of already alluded to we have these small heterogeneous studies that use surrogates, but we don't have any large randomized controlled trial that looks at actual neurological outcomes in hypertonic therapy in general. And then there's also nothing comparing hypertonic saline to mannitol. So what we have are these small heterogeneous trials, and depending on which data set you're looking at, there's maybe a trend or there's some small significant benefit in hypertonic saline over mannitol. But these, again, are in surrogate markers only. But as far as the things that really matter to us, like neurological outcomes and mortality, the jury is really still out.
Yeah.
Because we don't have that data available to us.
Yeah, that's right.
That concludes our interview with Dr. Rickard. I want to thank her so much for being on the program. And I also want to thank all of the listeners and readers. It's really you guys who inspire us to continue to do these sort of posts and do these interviews and ask those challenging but really important clinical questions. So thank you guys.